Right. Okay, we should be live by now. Hopefully no technical cock-ups. Welcome to the second live stream on YouTube from Sarayama, Pete Warren. Thanks for those who tuned in last time for your comments. Thank you very much for anybody who donated to help kind of fund this going forward. Thanks to everybody's generosities. We have now kind of like covered all of the costs. I've invested in a cheap new PC, which should help with the encoding for the live stream, maybe improve the quality of the stream. It was much better quality actually than I was expecting, looking back on it, and there was no major complaints about it, so hopefully it was all good for everybody. There is a chat feature on the YouTube. I don't know exactly how it works, but I can read all of your chats. So if anything is going wrong, thank you very much, Ray. If anything is going wrong, please tell me. If anybody has any questions at all about anything, just write them there, and we'll get to it kind of like in due course. Okay, so. I hope everyone's doing okay after another week of lockdown. I know I am starting to get a little bit annoyed with it, but I understand how important it is and everything, and I hope everybody's out there is safe. But that said, I am enjoying being home and playing around with the trees a lot, as you may have seen from my social media. But one of the things that we've done this week is to start to fertilize the trees. Around about this time of year, we sort of turn our attention to feeding trees, and so I thought it was a very appropriate topic to discuss in a live stream. People often have a lot of questions about fertilizing, and people go about it in very kind of haphazard ways. One thing that through my teaching, through regular workshops and working with people on a regular basis, is to try to make them think about the importance of fertilising from an objective-based perspective. And that's kind of like how we're going to try and sort of talk about it and approach it today. So we're going to make some assumptions about people's sort of bonsai practice and people's knowledge, and kind of like skip a few steps, because GCSE kind of like high school level biology classes, we all learn about, you know, we have a basic understanding of plant physiology and what plants need, and so most people who do bonsai should realize the importance of NPK and what they do. So nitrogen promotes sort of green growth. And then phosphorus and potassium are there for strength, flowering, fruiting, disease resistance, roots, and all those kind of things. Okay, and so we need to in the type of environment that we are growing our bonsai in, which is pretty much not entirely inorganic, but for example, one of the assumptions we're making today is that we grow our trees in that type of like Akadama, pumice, lava, Kiryu type mix, where there is no manure, there's no compost, there's no like massive amounts of kind of organic material that the tree can sort of feed on as it would do in the wild. There are nutrients in there that the tree can access. But realistically, we need to think of the soil that we're kind of like growing it in as not entirely inert, but we need to add to that. Okay, and one of the reasons why we use that type of Akadama, pumice and lava mix is that it gives us an incredible amount of control. So we can control what we put in, and how much we put in is also a little bit kind of determined by the ratio of those different components, because Akadama, for example, in that mix, in that soil mix, is the thing that really holds on to the nutrients. Okay, pumice and lava, very poor at holding on to nutrients, whereas the Akadama is. Okay, so the more Akadama is in a soil mix, the more likely it is to hold on to the fertilizer. Something that's planted in pure pumice, for example, fertilizer is very likely to just pass through. This is due to something called the cation exchange capacity, but we're not going to get too scientific, because a lot of people just kind of like switch off when it gets a little bit too kind of scientific. The information is out there, and we will sort of touch on it a little bit, but not too much. So we all kind of like, there's that sort of base assumption that people kind of like understand that. In addition to our NPK, then there are sort of micronutrients which are essential for plant health and development. Okay, there's a big long list of them, and for most general good quality fertilizers, they will be present. Okay, the only thing that I've ever needed to kind of focus on adding to the soil or adding to a pot in the UK has been magnesium. In the sense that a couple of 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a bit longer, we had just prolonged periods of rain, just excessive rain, and there was like all of the fertilizer, all the like a lot of the nutrients in the soil just get washed out. Magnesium is one of the first nutrients that gets kind of like leached out of the soil, gets washed away quite easily. And so we were seeing trees that were suffering from what looked like chlorosis. Okay, chlorosis is a lack of iron. Okay, so yellowing of leaves, veins in leaves sort of beginning to stick out, and such like, and just general kind of like weakness. And in that sort of situation, no matter how much iron that you would sort of would throw at the tree, put into the soil, the problem wouldn't be solved, because it wasn't a problem of a lack of iron within the soil. It was a problem of a lack of magnesium. Okay, magnesium is an essential element for the uptake of iron. Okay, and so the lack of magnesium was leading to a lack of iron absorption. Not that there was a lack of iron in the soil. Okay, it's just a lack of iron absorption. And so adding some magnesium to the soil enabled the absorption of oil of iron, and then the problem was solved. But that was a sort of a special case where we had just an incredible amount of water passing through the pots over a prolonged period of time. Okay, so most of the fertilizers that I would kind of recommend to use that are kind of popular within the UK have added magnesium in them, and so that's always a good thing to make sure that we have kind of like higher levels of, because of the kind of like the excessive water that passes through soil. Okay, but basically the one thing that I will stress, and this is going to be about, we're not going to talk about any sort of chemical types of fertilizer, because the best way and the only way that we operate here, and I try and insist that all of my clients and students try to do it as well, is to be entirely organic. Okay, so we will be using organic solid fertilizers and then some organic liquid fertilizers. And the reason for this is to develop health of the soil. Okay, health of the tree is derived from the health of the soil. Health of the soil is derived from a healthy balance between mycorrhiza, fungus, and bacteria within the soil. So we need to develop this ecosystem within the pot, okay, of beneficial fungus and beneficial bacteria. And when we start pumping the growing medium full of chemicals, then changes in pH, changes in the all the chemicals that are within the soil structure cause one of those to fluctuate dramatically. Okay, so maybe the bacteria go just thrive, just get incredibly strong, and that way we see lots of strong, vigorous growth. But then the tree is incapable of withstanding any type of drought, any type of stress, anything, any type of disease attacks. Okay, and this is one thing which people can often mistake the kind of like the goal of bonsai, and miss sort of interpret signs of health in a tree. Okay, and kind of like the analogy that I like to use is to think about the difference between vigor and health, in the sense of kind of the bodybuilding. Okay, now some of you out there are bodybuilders, I'm sure. Some of you are quite muscular, and I'm not going to insult you because you could crush my head and do unspeakable things to me. But if you are part of the bodybuilding fraternity, then I'm sure you would be aware of the illegal use of steroids. Okay, and people who use steroids, their muscles grow dramatically, but it's not real muscle to speak of. It's not muscle that has been generated through work, in the same way that a farm labourer would generate lots of muscles in the places that he needs them, just through work. Okay, so they have these kind of like almost like artificially pumped up muscles, which as soon as you stop taking the steroids, they start to disappear. Okay, and in addition to taking those steroids, you mess up all sorts of things, your kidneys, you get all sorts of problems, and you leave yourself, your general health deteriorates. So although it looks very vigorous and very muscular, it's completely different. Okay, and so there's no kind of substitute for that kind of like natural process of building up health. Okay, and so you could have a tree which is sending out lots and lots of vigorous shoots, okay, but it's not actually necessarily a healthy tree. Okay. Equally, you could have a tree which is sending out very few vigorous shoots, but is incredibly healthy. And for my goal in bonsai, which is to create trees with which have a sense of mochikomi. Mochikomi is a Japanese term which is used to describe the type of character that evolves from years and years of cultivation within a pot, and it's a very delicate type of it's a very difficult thing to describe, and it can only sort of be sort of seen and felt when looking at the trees, and it comes from certain type of kind of just like very sort of tight internodes, a certain type of growth which year on year is only just incrementally. It's very, very small amounts of growth, very, very small amounts of growth, rather than just massive amounts of growth coming back. And the trees develop a certain character. Okay, and you see that in literati style trees. You see that in trees like white pines, which have been very, very sort of slowly grown. The roots have been kept compact and they've not been fertilized heavily and just allowed to become super vigorous. But they've just developed a certain type of character, which is very calm, very understated. Okay. And that's the type of aesthetic that I aspire to within bonsai and things like that. And so my fertilizing regime and how I approach fertilizing and the growth of the trees is towards that goal. Okay. And so having a good, clear understanding of what your goal is in bonsai is essential for how we approach fertilizing. Okay, some people's goal in bonsai is to have big thick trunk, big thick branches, big thick foliage, massive amounts of just green everywhere. Okay, and that's fine. Okay, if that's what people want, that's okay. Okay, there are many schools of bonsai, there are many schools of thought in bonsai. All I'm talking about is mine and what I think about and how I approach that. And other people may approach it differently, but they also may be able to learn some things from how I approach it and apply it to their practice. But really kind of like thinking about that end goal aesthetically is what really drives our kind of like how we approach fertilizing. Okay. And so thinking about how am I going to fertilize this tree to achieve this goal this year. Now, a lot of information that you see about fertilizer is to do with like high yields or increasing the productivity of a plant or how big it is. For example, I did a lot of sort of searching around for organic products in the hydroponics world. For those people who have tents in their lofts or in their wardrobes to grow their tomatoes and their chilies. Okay, those people have a lot of, there's a lot of science behind the indoor growing of chilies, and they're often looking for a very highly organic product because it makes the taste of the chilies a lot better, apparently. I don't partake of chilies myself. But they're very, very interested in high yield. Okay, and so looking at kind of like researching the information in that world, their objectives are completely different to mine. However, some of the objectives are very similar. And so, for example, growing plants in that type of environment means they are very susceptible to insect attack and fungus and things like that. And so a lot of people have taken that organic approach, using only organic products in order to really try and build up that natural health of the chili plants that they're growing, in order to kind of withstand some of those attacks. Okay, so when we're doing, if you are kind of like going out and looking onto the internet and researching things, yes, there's lots of very valid information out there for various different other aspects of horticulture, but for ours and for what we're trying to achieve with bonsai, we may need to kind of like tweak those ideas, tweak the amounts that we give the trees, and think about how we approach things very, very differently. Okay, so there's no one size fits all kind of approach to fertilizing, and so for different species and different trees, different stages of development within the garden, have to take a very different approach. And so there's some, I've made some videos and sort of going around and looking at those kind of like in depth, you know, sort of different approaches to different trees. But one thing that you kind of have to kind of understand with that is you have to have a certain kind of a long-term plan with those trees and sort of stick to it. That scattergun approach of just kind of like going out and just throwing fertilizer just randomly at trees is going to end up with results that you don't want. Okay, and so that's the one thing really kind of just want to drill home, is that objective approach. Okay, so what do we fertilize with? What are the main sort of fertilizers that we can use? Before we get onto that, let's just make sure there's no questions. Chilies, there we go. Da-da-da, show us your hawthorn. How do I make a donation? Damn, you started on time. Okay. All right. Thank you. My chili seeds came out today. Good. Well done. All right. So no serious questions yet. Right. So what do we fertilize with? So as I said, what we do here is we have a regime of solid and liquid fertilizers. Okay. So we'll look at solid fertilizers first. Basically, anything that is organic and will break down suitably in your environment is the best thing. Now, I have behind me some BioGold, and we'll talk about that shortly. But for example, some good products that are available in the UK market. There is one product called Red Sun Bonsai Fertilizer. You can find that on redsunbonsai.co.uk, I think, which is very good. It's a very sort of powdered form of bonsai. They do a ericaceous and a normal fertilizer. Yeah, it's got the added magnesium in it, as I was talking about earlier, very important. And it, what it does is it breaks down very, very easily. It doesn't form too much of a crust after it's beginning to dissolve and go into the soil, and it's a very kind of low impact or less intense fertilizer. One of the things about using chemical fertilizers is, as we were sort of saying before, about it messing up with the biosystem within the pot. There are some people who have great success with chemical fertilizers, and you know, they can use them successfully. Through the use of them, though, they will have other issues, like the need to use pesticides and fungicides a lot more as a result, but they will get the type of growth that they're looking for. However, using chemical fertilizers is very difficult. It's very easy to overcook it, to put too much in, and to really sort of like damage the roots. There are plenty of stories of people who have just wiped out their their collection, or put serious damage to their collection through excessive use of chemical fertilisers. The couple of times that I did use some sort of semi-chemical fertilisers here on azaleas, it was just terrible results, and so I just never used it again. And so, organic all the way. So the RSB fertiliser that we just mentioned there, that's a very good one. Something very similar is what's it call it? Bee Green is what Ian Young over in Northern Ireland, he stocks that. This is something that we sort of trialled together. We sourced it together because it's a very good product and does it, you know, very similar, all the same kind of qualities as we just sort of described. Green Dream is very similar as well. Another kind of sort of pelleted fertilizer that's sold by Kaizen Bonsai, and that breaks down in a very sort of similar way. And so there's lots of kind of like very good organic products out there. Okay, with the organic fertilizer, you can't really overdo it. Okay, if you're putting piles and piles and piles of it on, then yes, you can do. But if you're doing it sensibly, then there's no way of kind of like overdoing it too much. Okay, so any of those products works very well. I use something similar. Okay, pelleted fertilizer, 555 plus micronutrients and such like. So just a good, well-balanced fertilizer. Okay, that's all it is. Just keep it simple, and I use that all throughout the growing season on trees that need it. Okay, in varying amounts. Okay, and we'll look at those varying amounts later. Okay, so that's the solid aspect to it. Okay, the other solid the solid fertilizer that is on the market and that a lot of people know of and talk about is Biogold. Okay, Japanese fertilizer, very, very good. Okay, but not so great in the UK climate. And here is a little video which looks at how we can use it. Okay, so Biogold is very good. Fertilizer to use for lots of different reasons. It's designed specifically for bonsai, and the way in which it's made is designed to give a certain type of growth, which is basically sort of very compact, very sort of dense type of growth, rather than, you know, massively elongating shoots due to the type of nitrogen that's used and the creation process. However, for us in the UK and for other, you know, sort of similar climates, people find it very difficult to use. Just by sort of spreading the pellets around, because it doesn't tend to break down the same way that it does in Japan. This is clearly to do with like the heat, the amount of humidity, and just various different factors. But it doesn't behave the same way that it does. It is designed to. It would do in some climates. And so a lot of people say that's terrible. Don't use it, because they're not basically making the most out of it. And so the best way to do it is to look on the instructions. And there's just one single line in English which says spread them after melt into the water, about 2-3 pieces per litre, which is basically make it into a liquid fertiliser. Okay. And since doing this, I noticed a massive difference in the type of growth that you get from trees and like the effectiveness of Biogold as fertiliser. And so what I tend to do, and you basically just figure out how it's best to do it. Some people just put some a handful of pellets into a watering can, leave it for about a week, and then use it, you know, sort of directly. What I tend to do is I'll put them into all the pellets into a 2-litre bottle and make a kind of like super concentrated version of it, and then spread it on that way. Okay, but basically put it in whatever container you're going to, fill it with water, and then leave it to sort of dissolve for usually about a week, I would say, is probably best. Okay. Okay, so you can see already the water's turned colour. Okay, now what you need to do is get this very technical pokey stick, and every so often just stir it around, mash up the particles. Okay, now particularly if you're using a bottle, don't put the cap on, because it will ferment. and gases will escape, and this can explode if you're not careful. So just if you are going to just put the cap on very loosely, and then also what I would tend to do is write Biogold on it. Do not drink. Okay, unless you want hairs on your chest. It doesn't work on your head, believe me.
bit. And then just leave it for usually up to about a week. Okay? And then we get some sort of super concentrated biogold juice, which is phenomenally good for spreading on your plants.
Okay, so that's how we use biogold around here. This is the biogold juice. There's all the bits at the bottom, so you just sort of shake it up every now and again, and let it start to dissolve properly. So then when it comes time to use it, if you are just sort of pouring it, you know, just put it a bit in a watering can and dilute it and stuff like that. I use this on certain trees, not everything, just the ones I really like, because it's really expensive stuff to use. If anyone gives me 100 quid, I'll drink this right now. But yeah, it's great stuff, and this is a very good way of using it. And people who I've recommended to have seen superb kind of results as a consequence of kind of putting it liquid. So biogold is a great fertilizer for various different reasons, but obviously you have to find a way of kind of utilizing it. Right, we had some questions come in, so we'll just kind of get on to answering those. A couple about hard or soft water and sort of pH. Right. So, yes, obviously, for the correct absorption of all the nutrients within the soil, the tree, you know, the soil, sort of all the medium really needs to be a fairly kind of neutral, ever so slightly acidic. So neutral being 7, so we're really looking for around about 6.5 is ideal sort of growing conditions for the absorption of most elements within the soil for the plant. Absorption rates increase or decrease depending on the pH of the soil mixture. And so what happens with if the pH is too high or too low is that some elements, they could be present within the soil but can become locked out because of the pH. Okay. In addition to that, with using very sort of hard water, there's a lot of different elements which will then go into the soil and disturb the chemistry and maybe be, they kind of like coat the Akadama, making it much more sort of difficult for different elements to be absorbed. And kind of, so with using very hard water, there's always that kind of you're just throwing more and more chemicals into the mix, and it makes it more difficult for the plants to kind of absorb what they want to. Okay, so the ideal sort of situation is to use as pure water as possible. One of the reasons why Japan has such success with bonsai is that the water coming out of the tap is incredibly pure and really kind of like ever so slightly acidic water, and so it's perfect for bonsai. What we do here is we collect as much rainwater as we possibly can. Okay, and so I've got 7,000-8,000 litre capacity for collecting rainwater, which we use that. If we do ever have to turn over to the city water, which is a slightly higher pH and much, much higher level of hardness, so there's much more chemical within the water itself, then we do notice a drop in the health and the vigour of the trees because of that inability to kind of absorb the nutrients as possible. So try and get as pure water as you possibly can. There's no need to go to the level of kind of reverse osmosis and things like that, but you know, just trying to get as clean a water as you possibly can will help with everything. How often would you use the dissolved biogold? We'll get to that. Does putting biogold in tea bags is going to address the issues breaking down? We'll get to that as well. My cat's the destroyer bonsai, thank you very much. Can we all chip in to make up that £100 bet? No. Okay. There was another question that I thought was very good too. Is pelleted chicken manure a good alternative? Okay, so one of the things with pelleted chicken manure is that it can be very, very aggressive and very, very strong. And it can be also very high in some salts. And so you can get, if it's used a lot, a similar type of effect as though you're using chemical fertilizer. And I have seen some people have quite bad results with pelleted chicken fertilizer. It is, depending on the brand, it can be quite useful if used sparingly. but you just got to be careful because it can be a little bit aggressive and a little bit salty. Just be careful with that. So the last one we'll look at now is how do we quickly recreate the right environment in the soil following repotting? So that's going to sort of like happen naturally. So the relationship between the mycorrhizae and the bacteria and the tree, it's a symbiotic relationship. So as the tree starts to grow, take a deciduous tree, particular for example, we repot them when there are no leaves on. And so as the tree starts to then grow, leaves open out, those leaves photosynthesize, send energy down to the roots. That energy goes down to the roots, which feeds the mycorrhizae, the bacteria, and then it feeds it back. Okay, so it will happen kind of naturally. Mycorrhizae will, for example, re-inoculating the soil with mycorrhizae when repotting pines is a bit of a kind of like, there's not really that much point because the tree needs to be actively growing to feed the mycorrhizae to spread. And so it's going to be a natural process. Fertilizing will help that. There is a little bit about fertilizing freshly repotted trees. So we don't want to be too aggressive with our fertilizers immediately after repotting. Just gradual kind of like increase of a fertilizer rather than just piling lots of it on, and things will kind of happen naturally. The way I approach fertilizing is just not to go too overboard. And to throw that balance way out of line. Okay. Right. So that's kind of like talking about some of the different varieties of solid fertilizers that we use. So let's just have a look at how it kind of then gets applied. Okay.
So we're going to go around fertilize. This is my pelleted fertilizer, just well balanced, 5-5-5. So then we're going to go around and place it on the trees according to their needs. Okay, so we have a Scots pine here, still very much in development, big swollen buds but not a whole lot of foliage. Okay, so we are looking at really pushing the growth on this one, getting some big long candles, okay, and then cutting those back later on in the year. We need to build up some bud density in this. Okay, so we're going to fertilize it quite heavily. Okay, and so I'm gonna get a handful of pellets, place them in a few different spots. Okay, it's always better to place them in piles rather than spread them out evenly, okay, because then they sort of stay moist, becomes like a hothouse for all the bacteria, it really breaks down. Okay, but then next time I come to apply fertilizer, I'll do it in different spots. Okay, so it all kind of gets distributed around. Okay, but that's quite a heavy fertilizer regime for a Scots pine at this time of year. As I said, we are looking at really pushing the development with this one. Okay, so a Scots pine that's next to it. Okay, this one is a New Forest. Scots pine, you can see the candles already beginning to extend. This is a super vigorous tree. Okay, this one gets bud pruned in the late summer twice, so it gets all of the kind of like the growth gets cut back in July, new bud set, then gets cut off in autumn, in August, and then another flush of bud set. That's how vigorous it is. I've got to actively kind of like throw energy away. Okay. And so this is a tree we really, really have to work hard to hold back. And so that gets zero application of solid fertilizer. Okay, it will get a little bit of liquid fertilizer, but nothing solid. Here we have a Chinese elm. Okay, very much in development of these lower branches. The top is, we're just trying to keep that in, chilling them up. Okay, and so we'll be doing a medium to heavy application of fertilizer for this one. Okay, it's loads of weeds in there that really should be taken out. Okay, so small amounts, four different spots. Okay, bit okay, because we're going to push the growth of this one, but we're going to then really, really have the opportunity to stay on top of this. Okay, so all of that, the fertilizer there will push growth up on top. It's going to come out, we'll be staying on top of that all the time, and then letting all of these branches just grow out and develop. Okay, with elms, we don't have to worry about leaf size, we don't have to worry about node length, so we can push it, but we do have to stay on top and not let things get too coarse. And then when it comes to either defoliation time or leaf drop, I have to make sure we go in there and thin things out quite a lot. Okay, but a good strong amount of fertilizer for this year, liquid fertilizer, we'll also be getting quite a bit of that. Okay, here's the Zelkova from the previous stream. Okay, again, this is one that's going to be in development. We're looking at pushing extensions out. Same reasoning behind this as with the previous Chinese elm. Okay, and so we can apply decent amounts in various different spots around the pot. Okay, so there's a good amount on there, so that's going to help to push the growth forward. Okay, again, liquid fertilizer, it will be getting plenty. Okay, so this is the fallen beech. Okay, it's just going to start to wake up. Okay, start to grow, buds are really swelling up. Okay, what we're going to want to do is, beech are a hungry species. Okay, and so they always want feeding relatively well. Okay, they like to have that organic material in the soil, I feel. Okay, and so what we're also trying to do is to encourage the roots to grow into this area. Okay, and so we'll place a good amount of fertilizer. It's just a small amount. Okay, but enough just to keep it pushing. Okay, this is a tree where we're looking at not really putting masses and masses of extension out. Okay, but we want to keep it healthy, we want to keep it growing. Okay, but we were looking to try and develop some of the inner branches, try and keep it a little bit tight. Okay, so we're pushing it, but we're not pushing it too hard. Okay, so here we have three pines. This is Scots pine, which is very much in the refinement stage. What we're looking at doing is just keeping it in this shape. We're not looking at pushing any of the spring growth. Okay, so we don't want any extensions of the candles. Okay, so this is getting no solid fertilizer, just a very light application of liquid fertilizer. Okay, and that's it for the first part of the season. This is a shore pine, okay, which is very much in development. It was planted on this rock last year. We're still looking at developing it. Okay, so it's going to get some solid fertilizer. Okay, now it's got to be careful with it. Washing off the soil surface, so as we're watering it, got to be careful with it being kind of on a rock and all the undulations. But we'll also definitely be looking at applications of liquid fertilizer for this one. Okay, this is a literati-ish kind of thin trunked Scots pine, dropping branch. Okay, it's still a little bit in development. Okay, but if we look at the buds, very strong buds. This is a real vigorous tree. Okay, and we are very much getting to the stage of wanting to control the growth, keep it dense and compact. Okay, so candle pinching will be done on this very sort of soon in the development. Okay, and so we will not be okay with any solid fertilizer. We'll get a little bit of liquid fertilizer just to help the mycorrhiza and to keep the soil healthy and happy, but no sort of solids to push it forward. Okay, next to it we have a maple in refinement stage. Okay, this is one that was ground layered. Okay, so this won't be getting any solid fertilizer until those leaves are hardened off. Okay, a little bit of liquid seed, a little liquid fertilizer, but not very much at all.
Okay, so I hope that was gave a good idea of like the approach of, you know, fertilizing some trees and not, and why we go about doing it. So the question that Ray asked about being more diligent with trees that are more well developed, absolutely. you go through, and generally we'll be fertilising the very little. It's about having that kind of objective that's important. So sometimes with well developed trees, however, they could be losing a little bit of vigour because you've been holding them back so much, and so maybe they do need a little bit of extra resources in the soil in order to kind of like pick up. So again, it's all case by case. Sort of looking at the pines, this is one tree that sort of sat next to. Let's just get the old camera on here. This is one tree that was very close to those other ones. Let's go to here. Nope, we're not connected. Just a second. Technical difficulties. There we go. Right. This was one tree that was connected. That was next to those pines you just saw. And this is a literati sort of style tree. This is one of the few trees that I have in the garden that I would actually genuinely call a literati. We will talk about this at some point in the future on a different stream. However, without any fertilizer at all last year, this was on a diet, just being absolutely starved. It's grown so much, it was pushing itself out of the pot. The roots are phenomenal, and it's all because of that mycorrhizal development. Okay, and all that got was liquid seaweed and fish hydrolysate. So not fertilizing, solid fertilizer is not gonna damage the trees in any way. And if anything, this one just went a little bit too gangbusters. So the one lesson I learned was to not fertilize too much liquid fertilizer. So this year, for certain trees like this one here, where the objective is very much to try and keep a very delicate appearance, then we'll be holding off the liquid even more. Okay. So let's put the camera down. So that's looking at kind of like the application of solids. There is one other kind of aspect to the application of solid fertilizer that we can look at. This will answer your question, Michael. And this is about bags and little cages and such like.
Okay, another method of kind of like application of fertilizer is to use tea bags. Some people swear by it. I would only use it for replanting, things like that, where we just kind of like put it onto a vertical surface. I feel it doesn't tend to allow the same kind of breakdown of materials actually kind of get into the soil as actually placing sort of pellets, direct powder, directly onto the soil surface, because we want a little bit of that stuff to kind of like get into the actual kind of like the soil sort of structure, and using tea bags doesn't really allow that. But if you do use them, then the trick is to use a good quality tea bag. Most of these are Japanese that people buy. And what I'd always do is put a little bit of sphagnum moss in there to keep the whole thing moist. Okay, because it's very important that the reasons why tea bags don't tend to work so well is that they tend to dry out quite quickly. Things need to be kept wet and also in contact with the soil, because it's the bacteria and the fungus in the soil which breaks down the fertilizer into kind of like edible components for the plant. Okay, so we want to keep it moist in there. Okay, and then whatever fertilizer you use, and I'll always use a powdered fertilizer in it. Okay, so this is some abrocas. Okay, so abrocas is a Japanese name basically for cornmeal, or you know, oilseed rape waste. I mean, abra means oil, and kas means basically waste. So it's the, you know, after they've been squeezing it all out for oil, it's the stuff that's left over. So put a bit of that in. And the other thing I would use also is kelp, powdered kelp, so seaweed, powdered seaweed. Put a bit of that in there. Okay, mix it all up. Okay, a little bit more sphagnum in there, keep it nice and moist. Okay, and then we can pin it to the side of the rock planting or some such. Okay, you can put biogold pellets in there, you can put pelleted fertilizer and things in there, but what I tend to find is that you come back a month later and it's pretty much, you know, exactly the same as it was there. Okay, so they do have the limited uses, but I don't really subscribe to using them that well. Same goes for the fertilizer baskets. Okay, what I would do is, rather than have it using it as they're sort of designed to, okay, I'd always use them the other way up. Okay, so what we'll do with this one is something very similar. Okay, so I put a little bit of sphagnum moss in the bottom just to keep everything nice and moist. Okay, bit of seaweed. Okay, the problem with using very pelleted stuff, with powdered stuff, is it actually sort of comes through. Okay, so we'll actually put some pellets in. So there's some pellets. Okay, on top of that. Alright, then we'll just put a tiny bit of sphagnum over the top there. And then what we'll do is we'll put it upside down on a tree with a skewer to keep it in position.
Okay, so here's a hinoki that we're looking at fertilising this year. So what we would do is just place it upside down. Okay, so the fertiliser, everything is all going to be in contact with the soil. Okay, push our chopstick through so it can't move. And then we've got to make sure that we water over the top of that so that everything just sort of filters through. And it's all being broken down on the inside in there. Okay, but like I said, this isn't a technique that I bother using. Some people like to use it because it looks nice and neat, but I just find putting the soil in the fertilizer in the piles, as you saw earlier, is the best way. So fertilizing rock plantings is always a little bit difficult because of the lack of kind of flat soil surface. This is where liquid fertilizer comes in very, very beneficial, but sometimes we do want to add some solids, and this is where the tea bag will come in useful. Okay, just like that. Okay, but it looks really ugly, and so I tend to just rely on a lot more liquid fertilizers for my rock plantings.
Okay, so I hope I didn't sound too dismissive of using bags and cages. They do have a use, particularly where you have a very sort of small surface area of a pot, and or like a sloped surface, and the fertilizer just naturally kind of rolls off. Or if you have animals and stuff that come in and might kind of disturb it and take things away. There was a question about where is it? No, wrong page, sorry. About using Japanese, we should swerve Japanese rapeseed style fertilizer. No, it's absolutely fine to use, as you saw there. There's this sort of saying about earlier with the different types of fertilizer. As long as it's kind of doing its job, then, which is to be broken down by the bacteria and fungus within the soil, so it needs to be in contact with the soil, it needs to sort of get into the soil a little bit, then it's fine. One of the things you'll find with very sort of powdered fertilizer is that it can cause a crust on the soil surface. Okay, but there are easy ways around that. Okay, so once you start seeing that starting to form, then just kind of remove that part of the soil, refresh it, and then you can continue to use it. What you will find if you don't, so one of the things we mentioned in the video is about moving the piles of fertilizer around. If, you know, after a while what will happen is that you will end up with these little patches of, you know, sort of crusty soil where the fertilizer was, particularly if it's a very vigorous rooting species. So something like a Chinese quince, if you put fertilizer on the soil surface, it's all the roots are going to grow up into that area. And you can often then get a little bit of dieback, and the roots kind of like matting over and dying off. If you just kind of just clean those areas up and put a little bit of fresh soil onto it, then you're not going to cause any sort of severe problems over time. So yes, using that, I've just put some lip salve on, it's made my lips really shiny. makeup. What was I saying? So the rapeseed cakes is fine. Or the rapeseed powder is fine to use, but you know, every single fertilizer has its positives and drawbacks. So just as long as you kind of like are aware of those and how it affects things. Okay. So that is kind of like the fertilizer aspect, kind of like of solid applications. One thing that I tend to do here is to apply powdered seaweed. And seaweed, as in like seaweed, cold pressed seaweed extract, and the powder stuff, isn't necessarily a fertilizer in the sense of it pushes growth. Okay, it's not something that makes, you know, elongations, makes things strong. What it does do is it provides a lot of those sort of micronutrients, provides some essential kind of like amino acids and hormones, which promote certain types of growth that are very beneficial to bonsai. And so I use powdered seaweed, thusly.
One thing I do always apply in the spring, and again a couple of times throughout the year, is this powdered seaweed. Okay, this just a light application of this on the soil. Since I started doing that, I've noticed a much higher increase in mycorrhizal development and the general health of the tree. Okay, it's just a light application, and what will happen is this will get watered through. Okay, and the small particles will just kind of like find their way into the soil structure and just create some micronutrients and give a place for the mycorrhizae and bacteria to kind of like develop. Okay, we don't want to put on so much so that it starts to clog the soil, and we then end up with problems with drainage and aeration. But just enough there just to give it something to give the mycorrhiza and the bacterial boost.
So yeah, a couple of applications of the powdered seaweed, just so that you get a little bit of kind of organic matter just percolating through into the soil. As I said, it doesn't want to be loads and loads, because we don't want to clog up all those pores and cause issues, but just enough so that the things can start to kind of grow in the soil. One thing that I do like to use as part of the soil mix is charcoal. You can get some bioactivated charcoal, biochar, which basically is something that acts as kind of like a petri dish or a breeding ground for the mycorrhizae and bacteria. And it does help to establish those kind of beneficial communities within your soil. For beech, for example, I also like to put a little bit of just a very small amount of kind of like chopped up sphagnum moss or some pine bark in there. Just not a whole lot, just a tiny little bit, because it really does, I found, help to kind of promote the mycorrhiza for beech, and you find a real musty smell after kind of like just using that. But it doesn't need to be a whole lot, because again, we don't want to add so much so that we are having difficulty with the control of the oxygen and moisture levels. But it's just something to give the mycorrhiza in there just that kind of starting ground on which to start breeding and to establish themselves. Okay, so I hope that's kind of like the solid aspects of fertilizing kind of like covered. So then we can just move on to liquid fertilizer, and a lot of the principles are essentially the same. So how we approach using liquid fertilizers in terms of the objectives of growing out a tree or not growing out a tree, the health is important, but particularly the use of cold pressed seaweed and like the fish emulsion, fish hydrolysates, is really really does help with the kind of the health of the tree, the health of the soil in particular. And that's one thing I've definitely found this last year after using one product in particular. But I've been using cold pressed seaweed for a long time, and it really is very, very sort of beneficial. We'll watch this video and then we can talk about it a little bit, because it makes a bit more sense that way. Okay,
so we're going to apply some liquid fertilizer to the garden for the first time this year. And what I use is the Birchmeyer Aquamix 1.2V. I'll put a link up somewhere. But it's only really useful if you have a massive amount of fertilizing to do. If not, just use a watering can and mix it up in that. And what we do is we put sort of slightly diluted fertilizer, fish emulsion, fish hydrolysate, or cold pressed seaweed into here, dilute it down slightly, and then through the magic of physics, it gets sucked up, mixed into here, and then it all comes out ready mixed at a designated concentration. Okay, and so this is good for me because I have, say, 200 litres, 150 to 200 litres in the summer, kind of like of fertiliser to make up, and so it's just quicker that. But if you've only got a small number of trees, you just do it in a bucket or do it in, hose, watering can. So the fertiliser we're going to be using is some cold pressed seaweed. This is some stuff that I was trying out from a company, and it's pretty good. It's just organic cold pressed seaweed, but lots of other products are out there. I'm not going to bother stocking it. And then some fish hydrolysate. Okay, we have an NPK of 877, trace elements, and all this other stuff, which gives us all of these phenomenal results. Okay, I started using this last year and saw a massive improvement in the health of my tree. Obviously, I bought it in 5 litre, 10 litre container. If I had any business sense about it, I would be putting that into smaller bottles and selling it. Okay, but what we're going to do is we are going to dilute it, put it in the mixer, and then we're going to go around the garden watering. Okay, so the application of liquid fertiliser, again, dependent on what we're trying to achieve. So this Planus incinerata, what we're looking at doing is really pushing the growth with this one this year, building up roots, building up the mycorrhiza in the soil. Okay, and so we'll be watering this one quite heavily and frequently. Okay, so maybe once a week, once every 10 days, it will have a light application of liquid fertiliser. Whereas the trees that we're looking at holding back, this trident, for example, would only get it once every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, that sort of thing. This larch is flowering heavily, okay, lost a branch or two, okay, it hasn't been repotted in a while, and so we need to make sure that it's vigorous. So again, this is a tree that will be fed relatively heavily, both liquid and solid. Okay, so it's the frequency as well. So again, once every week to 10 days. Okay, this is a piece of Scots pine material. Okay, it's still very much in the development stage. Okay, there's plenty of mycorrhiza in the pot. Okay, we need to keep that healthy. We need to keep that well fed. And so liquid application, solid application, pushing that growth is the order of the day. Okay, just wait, watch it for soaking in. Okay, keeping an eye on how it goes in, goes through the soil. Okay, so having a good kind of idea of how much is being absorbed, how much is passing through the pot. Yeah, is a good idea to try and work that out in your head. Okay, here we have a freshly made white pine rock planting. Okay, it's doing very well. The buds are really sort of growing and swelling. Okay, for this year, what we were interested in is getting health, vigor into the tree. Okay, it's a light application, making sure it really sort of soaks in, sinks into all of the soil that's underneath there, absorbed by the sphagnum moss, the soil behind it as well. Okay, what that will help to do is really boost the development of that mycorrhiza that's in there, and set the tree off and a great start. Okay, Zolkova, it's in development, growing out those long branches, but at the same time we're looking at definitely keeping the top of the tree back. So liquid fertilizer as well as the solid. Okay, here's an acer that we do not want to toot. Okay, so we're just watching it soak in and just trying to imagine how much of it's going through and being soaked up. Okay, so here's the Zelkova that we fertilized earlier. So we'll add to that liquid fertilizer. Okay, so now the soil mixture for this one is quite heavily pumice based. Okay, because of the severity of the repot last year, I like those roots into that warm soil. Okay, so this is not going to hold on to too much fertilizer as it passes through. So this is one that will be fertilized very, very frequently. Okay, and quite heavily.
Okay, so applying liquid fertilizer. How I really kind of approach it is a little and often type approach. So as not to kind of overcook it. I did kind of learn a little bit about that last year with the new product, as you saw with the Literati white pine, it just kind of like going far too crazy. And so this year what I'm going to be doing is maybe a little bit less sort of dilution, so making it a little bit weaker but doing it a little bit more frequently. And that way I can then water some trees more often. Okay, and then the trees that I'm really looking at trying to hold back, and just keep on that, just keep them nice and healthy and just ticking over rather than excessively growing, watering them once every 2 to 3 weeks, the other trees watering them a little bit more frequently, and that way I can get a little bit more control over how things get applied. So as I said right at the start, obviously using one of those kind of like nozzle attachments is good for a big nursery, but for yourselves, just doing it in a watering can is fine. So looking at seaweed extracts, anything that is kind of like organic and cold pressed will be a good idea to use. There are two types of kind of like seaweed extracts. So those that are chemically created or extracted, things, MaxiCrop is one of those. And there are other products on the market as well, and then things that are sort of cold pressed. Basically, if it's thick, green, kind of smells of the sea, then it's organic and cold pressed. If it's a little bit more kind of liquid and not quite so marine-like, then it's probably chemically extracted. The chemically extracted ones do have benefits, don't get me wrong, but what they may lack, they'll have all the nutrients, for example, the NPK and all the micro nutrients that are in there, but what they will tend to lack is the amino acids and the more complex chemicals that the cold pressed extraction will keep. And those are the kind of things that will trigger adventitious budding, that will trigger a certain type of more sort of compact growth within the tree, as well as really kind of like improving the soil health. Okay, so there are lots of kind of products out there on the market. Again, looking at some of the things within the indoor growing environment, there's plenty of sort of products there. I believe Ireland has a large seaweed industry, and there's some very good products over in Ireland, of which I have a bucket coming to me, hopefully, and stuff like that. So there's plenty of stuff out there, and like I said, as long as it's kind of like organic and cold pressed, then it should be really, really good. There are several different types of seaweed that get used. So for example, the seaweed that is created, or the seaweed extract that's created in South Africa, for example, is done from a different type of seaweed, and some of the stuff that is done from in Australia, it comes from a different seaweed as well, and a lot of it is actually algae, so marine algae that they're actually kind of extracting all the nutrients and stuff from. So there's a few different sort of products that are out there, but generally they will all do very, very sort of similar have similar results on your trees is something that I definitely recommend adding to the regime. If nothing else that you take from me banging on about fertiliser, please just take that away and use it, because it will improve the health of the soil and will improve the health of the tree as a result. Okay, right, so answer a few questions and then we'll get on to the last bit that I just want to talk about. Right, so let's just start from the back. Can you spray seaweed on the leaves? No, well, you can do. Irish seaweed, very tasty. You can do, but I don't do any sort of foliar feeding here. As I was saying earlier, the health of the tree comes from the health of the soil. And so what we're doing when we're fertilising, we're really just focusing on creating that healthy soil environment. Okay, and so spraying it on the leaves isn't going to help that. Okay. Does applying solid fert direct to the soil instead of, say, bags clog up the soil structure over time? Yes, it can do. I did answer that question. I hope that was sort of sufficiently answered. We do want a certain amount of the solid fertilizer to kind of like go into the soil structure, but not too much. Okay. And so what we do need to really kind of make sure of is that soil surface doesn't get clogged up, and so replacing that soil surface where the solid fertilizer can kind of like cake up is one thing that is essential. The few fertilizers that I mentioned earlier, the RSB fertilizer, the B Green, Green Dream, they tend to clog up the surface and create less kind of damage on the surface, as opposed to I have no idea what a bag of Dulce Tucker is. They clog up the surface a lot less than some fertilizers. How often do you feed with the dissolved BioGold, and how strong do you make it? Okay, so basically the recommended dosage is like 2 or 3 particles, cubes per litre. I would go a little bit stronger than that. And I would do it, if that was the only liquid feed I was going to be giving, I would probably be doing it once every 10 days, 2 weeks, something like that. Okay, so yeah, just kind of like going through that sort of cycle. One thing that is kind of with the application of liquid fertilizer is kind of a thing to bear in mind, is that you want the soil to be receptive to the fertilizer. By that I mean it needs to be on the ever so slightly dry side. Okay, so if you have a completely wet, sodden soil, okay, which is all of the Akadama is just wet and holding on to so much moisture, and all of the other particles are just holding on to so much moisture, and then you add liquid fertilizer to it, it's literally just going to pass straight through and not be absorbed by any of the soil particles in there. Okay, so you want to find that sweet spot of the soil is just beginning to dry out, so as the liquid fertilizer is passing through, these dry particles of soil are just going to kind of like suck it up and hold it onto it. Okay. Rather than it being into a wet soil. But if you let the soil dry out too much, then you run the risk of damaging the tree. Okay, so just allowing it to just become on the ever so slightly dry side will increase your effectiveness of the use of liquid fertilizer. But as I say, it's a dangerous thing to do to allow it to dry out too much. Okay. As I said right at the start as well, it's the Akadama really within the soil mix that is the essential kind of component for the absorption of the nutrients and the holding on to the nutrients, so it then becomes available for the plant, for the mycorrhiza and the bacteria to break down into edible components for the plant and to feed the plant. So, you know, if the Akadama is completely wet as the liquid fertilizer is passing through, this it's pointless. Okay, so it's just about finding that right sort of sweet spot for the application of the liquid fertilizer. Can you talk a little about feeding white pines in refinement, please? Okay, so white pines in refinement. What is the objective of a white pine in refinement? To keep it refined, to keep it healthy, but to keep the growth very short. So I would be looking to fertilize very little in the spring, right around about this time when the buds are opening up, turning into candles, and the candles are going to extend. And then once the candles are finished extending, then the needles then open up and start to grow. During that time, what we would be looking at is a minimal amount of growth, but a maximum amount of health. Okay, so we'd be looking at making sure that the soil has just the right kind of environment for health, and so things like the seaweed extract, a little bit of fish hydrolyzed, fish emulsion in there to keep the right balance between the bacteria and the fungus going, but not so much so that it's pushing it aggressively, would be the key. And then once we get into the latter part of the year, so once we get into sort of the more second half of the growing season, when we're fertilising for the end of the year, which would be another live stream, if this is still on, then you would be looking at fertilising a little bit more heavily. Okay, so what we're talking about now is very much the spring, early summer fertilising regime. Once we then get into autumn, a lot of those trees which have not been fed now, once all of their growth has hardened off, then they get hit hard. Then they get a lot of resources put into the soil, okay, when they need them, to higher PK fertilisers in the autumn. Okay, but that's a different stream. Right, we're just talking about spring now. Okay, a couple more questions, then we'll get on to the last thing. Thank you very much, Steve. It is a great white pine. Does solid fertiliser lose effectiveness when left in the bag 3 years? Yes, it can do. Once it's been opened up, once air can get in there, and moisture within the air as well can get into the fertilizer, then you can have chemical reactions happening. There'll be bacteria and fungus which then kind of like can start to feed on the fertilizer, and all sorts of different things can happen. So yeah, fertilizer will have a best before date on it. There will be one on here somewhere, I'm sure. There we go. I'll put the top here, 2006, one. That's how old this is. Oh, that was actually when it was made, as opposed to a best before date. But yeah, as long as it's not too old, then it should still be relatively effective. Okay. One of the things about a lot of the kind of solid fertilizers and organic fertilizers is that there can be a little bit of natural variation within the kind of the creation of it. And so I have had seen a couple of bags of BioGold where you use it and nothing happens, and you just kind of like, what's going on? In very much the same way that you can get bags of Akadama from the same manufacturer, which some of which are incredibly hard, incredibly well graded, very very clean, and some of them are half of its dust. It breaks down really really easily, and there's loads of crap in it. And that's just an unfortunate, you know, part of the creation process of both fertilizer and Akadama. So there can be that those kind of because of the, you know, they're mixing it in such big containers and things like that, sometimes it does happen. Any thoughts on humates in addition to feed? So humates are something which really help with the absorption of nutrients for the plants, and so your seaweed, cold pressed seaweed extracts and a good fish emulsion should have some humates in there. The green gloopy stuff that I was using, that has added humates and things like that. So if there is no mention of that within the product, actually the one product I didn't mention in terms of liquid fertilizer I should do, it's because it's kind of almost sat behind me. Okay, so this is a very good liquid fertilizer, and this has added humates and things like that. So let's go to that one. I'm not on a sponsorship deal or anything like this with the Bloom products, but they do create some very good beneficial things for bonsai, including this thing called Sea Fuel. They also do this is an Australian company, and they use there's a lot of seaweed based products there, but this is one which has fish hydrolysate and seaweed extracts within them, as well as fulvic acids, so humates, and it's a very very good product because it kind of like combines the two: your fish emulsion, your fish hydrolysate, and the seaweed extract in there. And let's just go back to that, because it does it say at the bottom there, also somewhere there, the cold composted kelp promotes natural hormones. Okay, so talking about the, you mentioned the thing we said about before, the cold pressed seaweed, and it also does the same for the fish emulsion as well. The, you know, hydrolysate. It's produced in such a way that maintains the integrity of a lot of the amino acids and a lot of the other the proteins and all these other wonderful chemicals, rather than just MPK. And some of the elements that we think of when fertilising. So if you're not using a product that has any mention of humates, then you can actually just purchase some and add it to it. But the more complicated you make these things, the more opportunity there is for messing up. So as I say, just use a decent fertiliser, one high quality solid fertiliser, and maybe one or two different liquid fertilizers. That sea fuel is a very good one because it kind of mixes it up, but definitely have some good cold pressed seaweed in the mix, and some type of fish product, because it will help, as I said, with the health of the soil. Okay, right, so I'll just get on to the last point that I want to make, because I was trying to keep it under about an hour, and we're going on a bit too far. So sort of saying about, in that last video, about kind of like looking at the soil, looking at the fertilisers going into the soil and trying to imagine what's happening. And this is where some people are naturally kind of like green-fingered, green-thumbed, just naturally very good at growing plants, and where some people aren't. And a lot of this is down to something which is very important for bonsai, which is empathy. Okay, and it's something that a lot of people have lost in the modern day as well, just in general kind of society. And by empathy, what we mean is the ability to put yourself in the position of somebody else and understand their feelings, their thoughts, their emotions. Okay, in the sense of bonsai, what we're talking about is not so much an emotional empathy, but something what's called like a cognitive empathy. So where we are able to think about the processes of what is happening with that tree. Okay, and so one of the things that I found very important throughout my apprenticeship and subsequently through my bonsai practice is to really try and be the tree. Right? It sounds very airy-fairy and like just new age and nonsense, but you have to try and imagine what is happening. Be the tree, okay? Think about what is happening underneath the soil. Try and imagine what is going on with the balance between the bacteria and the fungus. If there's too much bacteria, we're getting lots of really vigorous growth. If there's not enough fungus, the health of the tree drops down. Okay, so you can if you can see the signs in the tree, ill health in the tree, excessive vigorous growth, and then try and relate that to what you're trying to achieve. Okay, bonsai can be a very cerebral kind of thing. You can go through it very logically. What am I trying to achieve? What is my goal? What am I trying to accomplish this year with this tree, and how do I go about it? And putting yourself in the position of that tree, being empathetic with it, will improve the quality of the tree, improve your bonsai practice tremendously. Okay, people who are green fingered, people who are natural plantsmen, have that natural empathy with a plant. They can look at it and they know exactly if it needs water, if it needs fertilizer, what is going on, if it needs more sun, if it needs more shade. There's just a natural empathy with the plants. They can't explain it. It's just something. It's just a relationship between that person and plants. Okay, they just are just in tune with it, and we can train ourselves to be more in tune with our bonsai, and we do that by opening our eyes and opening our minds. One thing I always talk about, or try to talk about, and maybe sometimes not openly, is about having mental flexibility when approaching bonsai. By mental flexibility, I mean not taking a one-size-fits-all approach. One-size-fits-all is just going out and throwing fertilizer, any fertilizer onto trees. And for some people, that works. Okay, for some people, they promote that technique, and then they come in and they prune back things really, really hard, and they get a certain type of growth, and they get a certain type of aesthetic, and that's fine if that's what you want. Okay, that's fine, no problem at all with that. Okay, if you are looking for a certain type of aesthetic, and as I said halfway through, like what I'm looking for is a certain type of like mochikomi type of type finished product, something where you feel the age in the branch tips, you feel the delicacy of the growth, you feel age with every part of the tree. You can see the suffering that's gone on in certain trees, the literati trees. In order to achieve that, that's not going to be achieved by massive amounts of fertilizer. Okay, what it's going to be achieved by is having a clear idea of what our aesthetic goals are, what our goals are for growing the tree. Okay, in terms of elongating branches, holding branches back, building up ramification, things like that. Okay, and then thinking about how I can work in relation with the tree, keeping it healthy and achieving those aesthetic goals at the same time. In order to do that, I need to be very empathetic. I need to think about the tree's requirements. I need to think about the tree's situation, and I need to work with it. Okay. So again, it does sound a little bit kind of new age and airy fairy, but it is for me an essential part of kind of practicing bonsai. Those people who have the better trees are those people who are kind of like naturally kind of like empathetic with them, and who just by looking outside can tell whether or not the trees are going to need water. They have just, it's running in the background. Okay, as an apprentice, this was something that I had to learn how to do. Okay, you just have this sixth sense, spidey sense of like, oh my god, they're going to need water. And at first it's just like you were just constantly thinking everything needs water. Then you just grew through living for the trees day by day, just learn the processes, like when it actually did need water. So you'd go out all the time checking, and then you'd realize, okay, well, I don't need to check for another half an hour, I don't need to check for another hour. And there would always be one tree in the garden that you would go and check first, because if that one was dry, then everything else would be dry. So by building up those empathetic relationships with the individual trees, you're able to then kind of maintain the garden and make sure that all of the trees were watered and fertilized correctly. Okay, and so when we're looking at all of those different trees and what their requirements were, okay, you should, if you build up those relationships with the trees, as you're walking around your garden, you shouldn't need to stop and think, well, what was the plan for this year? And for some people, obviously, you know, bonsai is just a little bit of a hobby that they dip in and out of. Okay, most people don't go in it like as deep as staying up on Sunday night, you know, 20 past 10, listening to some mad guy talking in his workshop. But for those people who do, you know, it is about building up that sort of personal relationship and being empathetic with the tree, okay, and fertilizing, and the giving of nutrients, resources to the tree is something which is very, very much part of that. Okay, so I hope if anybody has any questions about that, what the hell are you talking about? Okay, any non-animal products, alternative to fish products? No, I don't know of any of them. A few words on foliar feeding. We don't do that here. Do you apply fish emulsions and seaweed together alternately? Okay, right. So you can apply them together, because essentially they are both put in an acid to stabilize them, so they don't break down when they're in the container themselves, and so they'll both pretty much be at the same pH. So it is possible to combine the two products together and apply. However, doing them separately, doing them alternately, is okay as well. So the thing that I mentioned before, the sea fuel, that's both products put together, essentially. Okay, so it's definitely possible to do that. Okay, again, yeah, foliar feed, we don't do that. Is it too... Okay, that's not... Right, okay, so that's pretty much it on fertilising. If anybody has any other questions, just find me on social media and such like. I just want to say thank you to everybody for tuning in, and for kind words, etc., on social media. And for those people who have donated, thank you very much. As I said, these streams are for free. If people found it very useful and feel like just sending a little bit of money, and then there is a link sort of coming through now. But those people who already have who already have donated, please do not feel like you have to donate every single time. It's basically, you know, kind of like we're just trying to do this. Where's the thing? Can you put it up, Ian? I messed it up. We're basically doing this to kind of like help people with the corona lockdown, and to make sure people's kind of like stay in contact with their trees, and such like. So thanks to everybody. We've kind of like covered all of the costs of the investment that we've made. So thank you for that. But yeah, if you do feel like it, then please do. There will be another stream coming up next week. Last week I completely didn't realise that on Wednesday, Mirai Live were doing their stream almost directly after us. And so we're going to do it on a different day, probably Thursday. And yes, we're looking at doing two a week. One will be kind of a bit more practical based. One might be a little bit more kind of design aesthetics based. But yeah, we'll continue with this as long as you keep tuning in, and it's worthwhile for everybody. So yeah, please tell everybody, you know, share it, do all that kind of stuff, and we'll keep making the streams. Okay, this stream today has been brought to you in association with Old Golden Hen, which is acceptable beer, bearing in mind it's not from Yorkshire. I'd just like to say I've not been drinking during the stream, and last time I wasn't either. Cheers. I hope you all have a pint as well on me. Thank you.